Chapter 35. Physical reminders to be grateful. Verse 1. God said to Jacob, "Arise, go up to Bethel and remain there, and build an altar there to the God who appeared to you when you were fleeing from your brother Esau." This is the only time God told a patriarch to build an altar. All other times, the patriarchs spontaneously built one. Perhaps God wanted Jacob to have a physical reminder of his intervention on Jacob's behalf when you were fleeing from your brother Esau. Gratitude must be constantly fed, unlike resentment, which lives on naturally, and physical reminders are essential. The Torah is filled with commandments consisting of physical reminders. For example, eating unleavened bread, matzah, for the 7 days of Passover each year, which symbolizes, among other things, it is better to live in freedom and eat poor food than to remain in slavery, even if one eats well, and building booths on the festival of booths, Sukkot tabernacles, to remind the Israelites forever of the booths in which they dwelled in the wilderness after God took them out of slavery in Egypt. Every good trait must be taught, and no trait is more essential to goodness than gratitude. That's why good parents repeatedly remind their children over and over to say thank you when something is done on their behalf. Monotheism was not adopted overnight. Verse 2. So Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, "Rid yourselves of the alien gods in your midst, purify yourselves, and change your clothes." Perhaps Jacob was referring to the idols Rachel had stolen from her father's house, Genesis chapter 31, verse 19. Or perhaps these were gods his clan had picked up from the polytheistic inhabitants of Shechem, or both. It undoubtedly comes as a surprise to some readers that members of Jacob's household kept idols for such a long time. But the Torah does not leave out embarrassing details about its heroes, and it makes the point that establishing ethical monotheism among the Israelites was neither fast nor easy. How Torah monotheism changed the world. This is the first time that the Torah draws a contrast between the God of Israel and other gods. Biblical monotheism and the Torah's denial of all other gods served as the single most important moral and intellectual advance in history. See the commentary on Exodus chapter 8, verse 6, in which I offer 15 world-transforming consequences of biblical monotheism. For the reader's convenience, I will briefly list them here. The God introduced by the Torah, 1, is the first God in history to have been entirely above and beyond nature. 2, brought universal morality into the world. 3, means good and evil are not individual or societal opinions, but objectively real. 4, morally judges every human being. 5, gives humanity hope. 6, introduced holiness, the elevation of humans from animal-like to beings created in God's image. 7, gives every individual unprecedented self-worth. 8, is necessary for human brotherhood. 9, began the long journey to belief in human equality. 10, is incorporeal. No body, not physical. 11, teaches us the physical realm is not the only reality. 12, means there is ultimate meaning to existence and to each of our lives. 13, gives human beings free will. 14, teaches might is not right. 15, made human moral progress possible. On regarding God as provider. Verse 3. Come, let us go up to Bethel, and I will build an altar there to the God who answered me when I was in distress and who has been with me wherever I have gone." Jacob spoke of God in personal terms, focusing on what God had done for him. Gratitude is powerful, as it is the mother of both goodness and happiness. Neither is possible without gratitude. This is an instance of a virtue that is rewarded in this world, since gratitude is a prerequisite for happiness. But a word of caution is appropriate here. The view of God as provider can lead to problems, to regarding God as a sort of celestial butler, a heavenly being whose purpose is to provide for us whenever we need something. This is not only unsophisticated, it can be dangerous to one's faith. If God's primary role is to do things for us, what happens when he doesn't? People may stop believing in him. If the provider stops providing, maybe there is no provider. God failing to deliver as expected is one of the most common reasons people stop believing in God. This is not Jacob's sole understanding of God, but if one has only the view of God expressed by Jacob here, one is inviting potentially major theological difficulties. Verse 4. They gave to Jacob all the alien gods that they had and the rings that were in their ears, and Jacob buried them under the terebinth that was near Shechem. The modern Etz Chaim Torah commentary explains these were no ordinary pieces of jewelry, but apparently talismans adorned with pagan symbols. Jacob intuitively senses that the continued presence of these gods is irreconcilable with the new life he has found in Yahweh. The whole incident must be read as an illustration of Jacob's religious maturation. Hamilton. Verse 5. As they set out, a terror from God fell on the cities round about, so that they did not pursue the sons of Jacob. Verse 6. Thus Jacob came to Luz, that is Bethel, in the land of Canaan, he and all the people who were with him. Verse 7. There he built an altar and named the site El Bethel, for it was there that God had revealed himself to him when he was fleeing from his brother. Verse 8. Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died and was buried under the oak below Bethel. So it was named Allen Backeth. Given that we know nothing about Deborah, this detail seems hardly worthy of mention. She had appeared in the biblical narrative once before. She was the unnamed nurse, presumably a childhood nanny who worked and cared for Rebekah throughout her life, whom Rebekah took with her when she accompanied Abraham's servant back to Canaan to marry Isaac. Genesis chapter 24, verse 59. As a last tie to Rebekah's childhood, this death must have mattered to her. Sarna contends more details were known about Deborah at some earlier point in Jewish history, so her death would have interested early readers. It is, to say the least, interesting that Deborah's death is mentioned, but Rebekah's is not. Rebekah and Leah are the only two of the matriarchs and patriarchs whose deaths are not recorded. The Torah notes only that Rebekah and Leah were buried in the cave of Machpelah along with the patriarchs and Sarah. Genesis chapter 49, verse 31. Verse 9. God appeared again to Jacob on his arrival from Paddan Aram, and he blessed him. God directly affirms Jacob's name change to Israel. Verse 10. God said to him, "You whose name is Jacob, you shall be called Jacob no more, but Israel shall be your name." Thus he named him Israel. Jacob's name change was already decreed in Genesis chapter 32, verse 29. But it was a messenger of God, not God himself, who made the announcement. Verse 11. And God said to him, "I am El Shaddai. Be fertile and increase. A nation, yea, an assembly of nations, shall descend from you." Assembly of nations most likely refers to all nations that eventually affirm God, not biological descendants. See From Your Loins below. A similar promise was expressed in God's blessing to Abraham. All the families of the earth shall bless themselves by you. Genesis chapter 12, verse 3. Verse 11 continued, Kings shall issue from your loins. These kings which issue from your loins does refer to biological descendants. Verse 12, The land that I assigned to Abraham and Isaac, I assign to you, and to your offspring to come will I assign the land. Although God is universal, the land of Israel is designated for the Israelite Jewish people. Verse 13, God parted from him at the spot where he had spoken to him. Verse 14, And Jacob set up a pillar at the site where he had spoken to him, a pillar of stone, and he offered a libation on it and poured oil upon it. Verse 15, Jacob gave the site where God had spoken to him the name of Bethel. Verse 16, They set out from Bethel, but when they were still some distance short of Ephrath, Rachel was in childbirth, and she had hard labor. Verse 17, When her labor was at its hardest, the midwife said to her, Have no fear, for it is another boy for you. Verse 18, But as she breathed her last, for she was dying, she named him Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. Benoni is generally understood to mean son of mourning. Jacob's name for his new son, Benjamin, Benjamin, has at least three possible interpretations. 1. Yamin is the Hebrew word for right, so Benjamin could mean son of my right hand, a symbol of dexterity, power, and protection. 2. Rashi notes that the word Yamina referred to the south in ancient languages, so Benjamin could mean son of the south, where this boy was born. He alone of Jacob's sons is born in Canaan. 3. Rashbam notes that the Hebrew word Yamin may be understood as Yamim, see Daniel chapter 12, verse 13, which is Hebrew for days. Thus, Jacob, who is now an old man, could be naming Benjamin son of my days. Whatever interpretation one accepts, if Onai means mourning or my sorrow, it is easy to understand why Jacob would not be pleased with that name. Among other reasons, he would not want his son saddled with a name that would forever remind him and those who knew him that his birth caused or at least accompanied his mother's death. Verse 19. Thus Rachel died. She was buried on the road to Ephrath, now Bethlehem. Verse 20. Over her grave, Jacob set up a pillar. It is the pillar at Rachel's grave to this day. Verse 21, Israel journeyed on and pitched his tent beyond Migdol Eder. Why does Reuben sleep with his father's concubine? Verse 22, While Israel stayed in that land, Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine. Reuben slept with Bilhah, who had been Rachel's servant, in an effort to ensure she would not supplant Leah as the new chief wife now that Rachel has died. The Talmud saw in the story an intention on the part of Reuben to defile the slave girl of his mother's dead rival, Rachel, and so to make her sexually taboo to Jacob. Alter. Reuben was very dedicated to his mother Leah, as the earlier incident with the mandrake showed. Genesis chapter 30, verse 14. Verse 22 continued, And Israel found out. Though Jacob later criticized and punished Reuben for his behavior, he apparently said nothing at the time of this incident. However, at the end of Jacob's life, his awareness of his son's behavior was reflected in the blessings he gave his sons. He rebuked Reuben, his firstborn, and denied him his birthright hegemony over the other sons' tribes. For you ascended your father's bed. Genesis chapter 49, verses 3 through 4. verse 22 continued, "Now the sons of Jacob were 12 in number." Verse 23, "The sons of Leah: Reuben, Jacob's firstborn son; Simeon, Levi; Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun." Verse 24, "The sons of Rachel: Joseph and Benjamin." Verse 25, "The sons of Bilhah, Rachel's maid: Dan and Naphtali." Verse 26, "And the sons of Zilpah, Leah's maid: Gad and Asher." These are the sons of Jacob who were born to him in Paddan Aram. Verse 27, "And Jacob came to his father Isaac at Mamre, at Kiriath Arba, now Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac had sojourned." Verse 28, "Isaac was 180 years old." Verse 29, "When he breathed his last and died, he was gathered to his kin in ripe old age." The phrase "gathered to his kin" was previously used in recounting Abraham's death. See chapter 25, verse 8. Now, Isaac joined his deceased relatives in the afterlife. To understand why "gathered to his kin" implies the afterlife, see the essay in Genesis chapter 25, verse 8. Esau was not a bad man. Verse 29 continued, "And he was buried by his sons, Esau and Jacob." Once again, Esau proved himself to be a respectful and dutiful son. Though he was not the right person to carry on the monotheist tradition, he was a decent human being. I believe he is unfairly maligned by some later commentaries on the Bible. The Torah may well share this opinion because it lists Esau first here. This seems rather to be a sign of recognition, compassion, and compensation to Esau for his displacement by Jacob. Friedman.